You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Close basketball game last night. The Razorbacks won over Winthrop. We'll discuss it today with Anthony Christensen. Also, we'll be joined by David Eckert from the Austin American-Statesman to talk about this weekend's football game. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
What a game last night, 84-83, Arkansas beat Winthrop. I think the key for any good team, everybody's going to struggle. And your struggle may not be that you're playing a one-point game where you got to come back and you know, really just be perfect down the stretch to win the game. But every team's going to struggle. They're going to have that game or two games, three games maybe, even good teams where they look back on it and they say, man, we shouldn't have been that close with that team. And I think that was certainly the case with Arkansas last night against Winthrop. This is three games now over an eight-day span for the Razorbacks where they have not played a good game. They didn't play a good game against UCA. They didn't play a particularly great game against Samford. And certainly they, you know, I mean, I think you could make the argument, and I think both coaches kind of made the argument after the game last night, Arkansas should have been beaten by Winthrop. But I think the key for a good team is that even while you struggle, you win. And I think that's the difference between teams that go on to have really good seasons and teams that maybe just have average or bad seasons is that, you know, the really good teams, they win the games when they are struggling and they're able to figure it out and still win games as they are figuring it out. And I think that's what's happened with Arkansas here over the last week. Certainly, there's a lot to be concerned with about this team. I think interior defense is a problem. Last night, perimeter defense was a problem at times. I think at other times, you just had to tip your hat to Winthrop and say, my God, you guys are just playing out of your minds. They won, and I guess we'll start there, Anthony. They won, Arkansas plays Duke in 8 days. If you just kind of look at that, and I know they got another game between now and then, but you know, kind of looking long range at their next big game, the forecast for that Duke game doesn't look real pretty based on what we've seen from the Razorbacks in the last week.
It's crazy that's already 8 days away. Like, that's
happy
wild.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the pumpkin pie ready.
Happy Thanksgiving to all, and to all a good night. I know that's not a Thanksgiving saying. No. But anyway, no, they did win. You know, I thought they ended the game, you know, really well. You know, obviously a 6-0 run over the last minute 33, I believe it was, minute 30-something. You know, hit three of their final three shots, you know, made they took advantage of some turnovers there at the end. But, you know, like you said, like John Calipari said last night, the team that performed better last night did not win the game.
No.
You know, Winthrop, I thought, was excellent, and I know we talked a little bit about it yesterday. You know, I talked a lot about Daylon Berry, going into the game yesterday. He was not the best player for Winthrop last night. You know, that was Kareem Rozier, who was, you know, sensational. You know, 7 of 10 from three, and you know, he was awesome. And then Daylon Berry, you know, had the ball in his hands on that last possession. Arkansas played great defense on that last possession. Let me make that distinction.
Malik Thomas played great defense on the last possession, and I want to talk about him, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, it was Winthrop chose a horrible time to have its worst possession of the game. You know, and that's not to discredit Malik Thomas's defense or the team's defense just in general, because you know obviously Malik Thomas was guarding Daylon Berry really, really well on that possession. But
Daylon Berry took the inbounds pass and he was going to shoot that shot.
Yes.
That is a hero. That is a hero shot.
Who you wanted to have the ball in your
really?
Hand.
Not Rozier. Work it inside. Did you see how Arkansas was defending the rim last night? Work that thing inside and see if you can get Colette.
Yeah, Colette could have been that guy.
I mean, the last time they went inside to him, he bodied his defender.
Yeah, you know, him and Duncombe both had some good post moves in that game, and Duncombe obviously fouled out on the scuffle.
The Donnybrook. I've been waiting all day to use the word Donnybrook. That's what that was.
Yeah, but you know, survival, I guess, is the key takeaway from that game. But yeah, the team that performed better, you know, for the the team that performed better last night was not the team that won, and you know, John Calipari said as much.
I think if you're Arkansas, you've got to be pleased with how the team reacted there in the last 90 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. Whether it be, I thought, you know, Pringle, even before he made the game winning shot, he made a really good, strong drive to the basket to get him within three. Mm-hmm. Winthrop comes down. I keep trying to call him Lipscomb again. Winthrop comes down, and they're trying to work the clock, and they did. And Brazil plays really good defense, gets a block. Acuff gets a layup to get him within one. And then Malik Thomas, you know, there was a point last night where I was looking up how many Razorbacks had ever scored 30 as a freshman, because mm-hmm. There ain't many. In fact, it's only happened seven times before. So, like, one player, I think, has done it multiple times. It's been like 7 or 8 years since it's even happened in a game period. And he had 26 points with almost 8 minutes left. At the under eight timeout, he had 26 points. It's like, what's he going to end up with? Is he going to challenge Bobby Portis's record for points in a game by a freshman? He didn't score again. But I was really impressed with his defense. Mm-hmm. Even before the last minute, I can't remember when this was. It was at some point in the second half. They had him on, I think it was Barry. Mm-hmm. And they set a screen up top for Barry. And Thomas just ran right over the top of that screen. Played it beautifully, mm-hmm. defensively. Now, I think Winthrop ended up scoring in that possession. May have been a second chance basket. But I was really impressed just watching him, you know, work his way around that screen. It was real... it was a veteran move that I don't know that you expected from somebody playing their fifth college game.
Yeah.
And then in the last minute of the game, I mean, his defense was as big a story as the scuffle, as Nick Pringle's shot. That was Michael Jordan in game 6 against the Utah Jazz. What he did,
I was there,
coming around to dunk home and stripping the ball from him and leading to that game-winning shot by Pringle. In fact, I would even go so far as to say, watching the replay, Duncombe, part of why he got into the scuffle with Pringle in the first place, it was a frustration moment for him from what had happened, you know, just moments earlier when he got that ball stripped away. Mm-hmm. Great play by Malik. And then, you know, we mentioned the defense on Barry there at the end, you know, just didn't give him any daylight. I mean, it was a low quality, low percentage shot that they forced Winthrop into. Mm-hmm. There at the end of the game. And so for, you know, when we talk about Malik Thomas this year, we talk a lot about Malik Thomas and his offense. Mm-hmm. We talk about, you know, there are some games where he has had some higher assist totals, 6-7 assists. He's a decent rebounder. But I thought what I saw from him last night was a real buy-in defensively. And you can't really say that about a whole lot of players last night, because the defense was, you know,
bad,
sorely lacking from Arkansas during long stretches of that game. But you think about the big run they had in the first half. Thomas was on the floor. Mm-hmm. You think about what happened for them at the most critical time in the second half. Thomas was on the floor. So I thought as big a story as the comeback last night was the defensive effort that Malik Thomas showed. And it feels like there's a lot to build off there with him.
Yeah, and to like you mentioned, to get a performance on the defensive end, you know, like that from a guy as young as he is. Obviously, you know, he's... You know, he was coming out of high school with, you know, big time reputation for a reason, but most of that it's because he's, you know, an excellent scorer. You know, he's come in, he's been a great rebounder for, you know, at the guard spot. Only ended up with 3 rebounds last night, but still, just throughout the season, he's been a great rebounder for mm-hmm. them. He's gotten a lot of assists, and you know, last night he ended up with 2 steals. Obviously, the really critical one there at the end, and you know, his defense just, you know, like we mentioned there on the last play, was excellent. Didn't even give them an opportunity to, you know, call an audible and get it into somebody else's hands. You know, he really forced Barry into, you know, a bad look, a bad low percentage shot. So I mean, he was phenomenal. I mean, John Calipari did mention, you know, sometimes there were times where he started, you know, forcing up shots that he shouldn't have. You know, which, you know, I guess, you know, when you're playing that well for that long on the offensive end, maybe you start feeling yourself a little bit too much. But you know, I thought he was excellent, and I don't think you can say that for a lot of other players for Arkansas. Maybe besides, you know, I thought Nick Pringle had a really nice night, even outside just that that last little stretch where he scored four of the last 6 points. You know, he was 5 of 5 from the field, 13 points, 7 rebounds. You know, and you know, he's a guy you need to have nights like that, especially with how much their front court has been, you know, lacking a little bit in recent games. So, but no, Malik Thomas I thought was excellent.
Yeah, Pringle, he gives them effort. You know, we talked yesterday about Ewan, and is the effort all there with Ewan? That question is not there with Pringle. Pringle is, I mean, the whole last minute of that game with him, that is effort. The spin move that he made to get up the game winning shot was just
it was nice.
Really, yeah. I mean, that was all effort the last minute from him, or last, you know, 90 seconds.
He's not the guy you expect to see a spin move come out, but you know, he was, It was. I mean, it was a great basket. I mean, you know, it was a great fast break off the steal, and you know, like I said, I mean, he was huge down the stretch and really throughout the game. The 7 rebounds, he had 2 blocks as well. Excuse me, I was looking at the wrong stat. He did have 2 blocks. Almost said 2 steals. He did not have 2 steals, but you know, 2 blocks in a game, you know, like that ends up as a 1-point game. That's a game changer. So I mean, I thought he was excellent. And you know, he didn't start the game. I believe that was the first time this season he didn't start. Let me pull that up real quick just to make sure I'm not spreading misinformation.
Well, you're looking at that. Winthrop, I think there are probably going to be a lot of people out there who today,
it was the first time he didn't start this season.
For Winthrop, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of people out there, boy, they're better than we thought they were. I don't know that they're better than we thought they were. Mm-hmm. I just think they were really hot last night. They're a veteran team. They can certainly shoot the three. We'll see what they do in the Big South Conference.
Yes, Big South. They're picked to finish fifth in the Big South.
I figured they probably, let me take this back. I don't know enough about the Big South to make any too big declarative statements here. But even if they don't win the Big South.
You want me to go in on the Big South?
I guess where I'm going with this is the Big South tournament. I can see them getting hot. You know, if they can shoot the perimeter shot the way they did yesterday, maybe they shoot themselves into the tournament. I don't know that I want to go so far as to say they're a whole lot better than we thought they were, because they are 2-3, and you know, they've got some losses on there to teams that aren't anywhere near the quality of roster that we think Arkansas is.
Mm-hmm. If Arkansas ends up being worse than Coastal Carolina, I'll be very surprised.
I think we all would be.
No disrespect to the Chanticleers.
Arkansas found a way to win. I think there's a lot of value in that. Mm-hmm. Moving on, the whole scuffle at the end. They have got to fix this rule about this zero tolerance. You know, DJ Wagner dipped his toe in the water last night, so to speak. I mean, he took one step off the bench. He was not involved in that at all. Mm-hmm. What he saw was a freshman, Isaiah Seely, run off the bench and out into the middle of the fray. And, you know, he takes a step and then he kind of catches himself trying to get back over here, you know? And he realized he couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And he was smart enough to say, I got to stay right here. But because he dipped the toe in the water, he gets ejected. This is ridiculous. You know, I think what bothers me about college basketball and about, you know, a lot of rules in general, is there's zero tolerance at times, and then at other times, you know, we're using our brain. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like, you know, you got two big guys down here battling out, and somebody takes an elbow to the ear, and we're going to watch this like the Zapruder film for 15 minutes and figure out, was it intentional, or is it a flagrant one, or is it a flagrant two? And we can use our brains there to figure out, you know, our best judgment, our common sense, to figure out, hey, this is what that was. Mm-hmm. But we can't do that. We can't take more than 2 seconds to look at this and say, hey, he was not part of this. He's not running in there to try to fight Winthrop. Mm-hmm. Like this rule has got to get changed. I actually had a baseball game up here because it reminded me of this college baseball game a couple of years ago where Georgia and Mississippi State got into it at home plate.
Can't say I watched.
And you had fielders who got thrown out of the game because they didn't go directly to the bench. You know, their natural instinct is to go kind of keep their teammate from running in there. Mm-hmm. And the NCAA came back, you know, after I mean, this was like a 40-minute stoppage in play as they were watching this film, trying to figure out, yeah, he's got to go, this and that. And they fixed that rule after the year because they saw how ridiculous it was. Mm-hmm. usually when a rule gets changed, it's going to take something high profile to change it. So, DJ Wagner getting thrown out on a Tuesday night against Winthrop in November, that's probably not going to change the rule. But there's going to come a time where somebody really high profile in a high profile game is going to fall victim to this nonsense of a rule. And that's what's going to change the rule down the line. It's ridiculous that he got thrown out for that. I mean, and he wasn't on the floor. He wasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was going to be on the floor anyway for the final 12 seconds. Yeah, but what happens if that game goes to overtime? And what happens if Darius Acuff fouls out? Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you don't have your one of your best guys available because of this nonsense that because you take a step, it is a natural reaction to kind of take a step. And I would say that, where you see his veteran leadership, if you will, is the ability to stop himself and step back onto the bench. I hated to see him get ejected for that. I hate this rule. I've hated this rule for 30 plus years. I think that we've got to be able to use our brains and our common sense and say, look, hey, Isaiah Seely, you can't run out there on the floor and do that. Mm-hmm. There's a teaching moment there. But there's a difference between what he did and what Wagner did. One is ejectable. One should not be.
I would agree with everything you just said. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. To all a good night.
They've got to change this.
Yeah,
they've got to change.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I don't know how much more there is to add. Just I mean, it's a dumb rule. I mean, you understand the way that it's written. I guess it is just the way it is. But
it doesn't mean that's the way it's got to be.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it
should be changed.
This is no different than, we might have laws on the docket that says you can't ride your horse after 5 o'clock on a Sunday that was passed in, 1822.
Ridiculous. They just got me for that the other day.
There are some ridiculous laws out there like that.
I'm just kidding. I don't have a horse.
But, it's like just because it is a rule doesn't mean it is a good rule. And doesn't mean that, it should not be adapted. And again, you've got the video. You've got the video there to look and see who dipped their toe in the water. Mm-hmm. Let's use that video and let's use our common sense and let's figure out that there's something that there's a better way to adjudicate this.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. But I mean, there's no suspensions as far as I'm aware for that. So, I guess. It's
water under the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's water under the bridge, but I just thought that was that bothered me last night.
For sure. But you are right. It is kind of the natural reaction to be like, "Oh, my boys are in trouble."
Yeah.
Like, I think every athlete, who's played at
I don't think you have to be an athlete.
Yeah. I guess,
I just think it's a human reaction. You see somebody that's in trouble, your natural reaction, or most people's natural reaction, is to jump in and try to help.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
Doesn't matter if you're an athlete or, somebody walking down the street. And, that's just life.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
I did look this up because there's been a lot of people who have been talking about the attendance, and I've been one of them.
Okay.
And whether or not the reseeding has hurt the attendance.
Okay.
So what I've got right now, I've got data for the first two games this season. I don't have data for the last two, but I do have data for the first two, and I've got data for all of last year. And this is ticket scanned data at Bud Walton Arena.
Okay.
This gives you as clear a picture as anything as to what the actual attendance is. They're going to announce every game the attendance is 19,200 because that's how many tickets they've sold.
Tickets are out, yeah.
Well, Here's what the data says this year. Last year, their first two games were played on a midweek. I think one was on a Monday, one was on a Tuesday. This year, they had played two Tuesday games. Mm-hmm. And this year, average ticket scanned for the first two games at Bud Walton Arena, 10,198.
Okay.
Last year, first two games at Bud Walton Arena, 10,189. So that's a difference of 9.
Those numbers are going up.
That's a difference of 9. So basically, you've got the same attendance this year, actual attendance, that you had at the same time last year. Now, that's an incredibly small sample size. I understand that. But what I think it goes, what it speaks to, Anthony, is that the game-going tendency for ticket holders, at least through a couple of games this year, has remained the same as it did a year ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, this has been a problem at Arkansas for long before Calipari came, long before the reseeding happened. It's these midweek games or weeknight games, whatever you want to call them, people just don't want to show up to them. And I got my theories why that's the case.
You don't think people want to go see the Eagles?
They don't.
They don't want to see Winthrop?
They don't. They don't.
Speak for yourself.
But like it takes a name brand to get people in the building. It just does. Mm-hmm. And it takes a weekend game in a lot of cases to get people in the building. And I understand there are people who live a good deal away who coming to a game at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night, it's just not feasible for them. Those aren't necessarily like, and so I don't expect every seat to be filled during these games. But are you telling me that there aren't more than 10,198 people who have tickets locally who can come to these games? I don't understand. Unless the tickets are being bought up by corporations and they're just not distributing them, they're not using them. And I think there probably is some of that. I don't think it's as prevalent as
that might be.
I don't think it's as prevalent as a lot of people think it is. I don't think like there's 9,900 corporate seats that aren't being used at these games. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you buy tickets and why you don't come to the games. Here's my thoughts on this. I got a couple of thoughts. Number one, there's a renovation coming to Bud Walton Arena down the road. Mm-hmm. And I know that we all know there are seats that are going to be taken out of the arena when this renovation comes, because there's no way without blowing out the exterior walls of that arena that you're going to be able to fit more premium seats in there without taking away some of the general admission seats. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you call them the GA seats, the chairback seats.
Yeah.
There's no way to do that. So we know that there are going to be seats that are taken out in order to add premium seats. That's part of the reason that they're doing this renovation. The question is going to become, how many seats do you take out of that arena? Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of people who think, you know, it may only be a couple of thousand. They can still keep 17,000. There are some other people who think might be a lot more than that. And, you know, I know for a fact, one of the things that they've looked at, you know, some of the data that they have looked at is, what is the average number of tickets that are used per game? Mm-hmm. And that's going to help, you know, inform that decision. How many seats get taken out? Do you love Bud Walton Arena enough that you want to keep it one of those high capacity arenas? Or, you know, do you want to run the risk that you don't show up for a lot of these games and maybe they drop that capacity down to 13,000, 14,000? Because I think that's on the table. So I think that's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, John Calipari is not going to be the coach here for very long. I think we all know that this is
– You don't think this maybe, is a 20-year project?
This is 5 to 8 years, I would guess, that they get out of John Calipari, just based on what he said. 25
to 30 families.
25 to 30 families. That's right. So, I mean, whatever that means, that's a – I mean, that's dripping with ambiguity.
Yes.
25 to 30 families. But, you know, I would guess 5 to 8 years. He's 66 years old. Yeah. You know, I mean, how long does he want to coach? Nobody knows. I mean, I'm sure he knows, but
and there have been other coaches, you know, in his coaching generation who have, you know, stepped away.
In 5 years, you're probably looking at an arena renovation. In 5 years, you're probably looking at being either at the end or toward the end of the Calipari era, mm-hmm. and having to go out and hire another coach. And, you know, is this something they pay attention to, the fan support or the lack thereof during these, you know, the arena is always going to fill up when you got Kentucky coming in. It's always mm-hmm. going to fill up when you got Tennessee coming in, those type of teams, and especially on a weekend. The lack of filling up the seats, though, during these weeknight games and even the weeknight games during conference season, does that make a difference when you're trying to go out in however many years and replace Calipari with another high level coach? I don't know. It might. So, I mean, these are just a couple of thoughts that I have as it relates to attendance and people not showing up. It's clear that it bothers this coaching staff that came from Kentucky, where when you turn the lights on at Rupp, it really doesn't matter who they're playing. there's going to be most of the seats that are filled. Doesn't matter if it's on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. They're going to fill up most of those seats. And then the other thing that, you know, kind of drove me crazy last night, it felt like we were in church for about 38 minutes of that game. And about the last 2 minutes, it felt like somebody got baptized and everybody jumped up and yelled hallelujah. And they figured out with a couple of minutes left in the game,
the most of the game was the wedding. The last 2 minutes was the reception.
There you go. I don't go to weddings. I'll take your word for it.
We've discussed this.
But it was like with 2 minutes left in the game, people kind of figure it out. It's like, hey, if we get up and make some noise, maybe it might affect what's going on the floor. Mm-hmm. It was weird. And then they got up and they made noise. And I'm telling you,
it was a great environment for the last bit of that game.
You know, the 10,000, 11,000, however many people were there, it made a difference in those last 2 minutes. What if you do that for 40 minutes? Mm-hmm. I don't think you're playing Winthrop down to the wire. I think you beat that team by 15, 20 points because you get them sped up. They're not. The atmosphere in that arena last night was just really bizarre. It was bizarre last week when they played UCA. I just don't understand buying tickets. It's like people buy tickets and they come there to watch a movie. It's like, okay, I'm going to watch this play out, but I know at the end it's going to have a happy ending and the good guys are going to win. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what I do. Like what I do and how I react here in the theater, it doesn't matter because this is already scripted and this is how it's going to be. And then last night, I think they figured out with about 2 minutes left, like, this is turning into a horror movie. We better get up and see if we can change the ending a little bit. And they did, and give them credit for that. But, you know, I always talk about the good old days. There was a time where you played Delaware State or you played Northwestern State there.
The Hornets,
and there were 19,000 people there, and they were full-throated, and they were into it. And you know what it was, Anthony? They didn't have a cell phone sitting in their face. Distracting them. They weren't reading all these stories about, well, this is really kind of a nobody team and you know, they ought to
They're
win
not
by
my stories
19
then.
And a half points or whatever the betting line
well,
was.
Oh yeah, we do include that in the how to watch. The viewer, so maybe that is my fault.
Like the spectator habit inside the arena, that has really changed over the years. And I don't know how you get that back. I was listening to something the other day. This is really off topic. But Bob Dylan, whenever he does concerts, he doesn't let people have their cell phones. They've got those those little lock pouches that you get
at the
schools.
Did you watch the Bob Dylan movie?
I did not. But they've got like those lock pouches that they have at the schools, and they put your phones in there when you come in the arena, and then you get to unlock your phone whenever you leave. I don't suspect that they're going to do that at basketball games, but it may not be the worst idea because I think that, you know, if you're not distracted by this the whole time, maybe you're focusing on what's going on out here.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah. No, but the environment there at the end of the game was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah, no, it was great.
And if you get that for 40 minutes, that game doesn't go down to the wire. It doesn't. There's no way. Zero way.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But you know what?
Hey, and maybe if you fill up all this, not even all the seats, maybe if you get 75% of the seats full and everybody's into it for, say, 30, 35 minutes, that game ain't going down to the wire with Winthrop. I just really don't think it is. The crowd noise and the interaction there for the last 2 minutes really affected them offensively, mm-hmm. I thought, on their last two or three possessions.
Yeah, I mean, Winthrop's a team that doesn't turn the ball over a lot, I mean, even despite playing at one of the highest tempos in the country. And you know, I believe it was 2 turnovers in the last 3 possessions for Winthrop, if I'm not mistaken. 2 in the last 4 or something like that. And, you know, so maybe it does, you know, play a factor, you know, in that. But, yeah, you know, it was a great environment there for the last bit of the game. And, you know, I don't want to begrudge or, you know, be like, you know, be louder, kids, or anything like that. But yeah, no, it was.
But
a great
I think you've got a duty.
At the end, but
Bobby
yeah.
Smittle, who is known as Hognoxious.
Okay.
He told me one time, he's a great baseball fan. I mean, he was like the baseball fan in Arkansas for several years. And he told me one time, he said when you buy a ticket, that's not a license to be entertained. He said that's a license to go to work as a fan. And there is, like, that's lost, I think a lot of times today, you know, people just go there. They, hey, okay, I'm here. Entertain me. Mm-hmm. You got to, I think you've got a duty whenever you go into the arena to support your team. It doesn't matter if it's Winthrop or if it's Kentucky. You got a duty to go in there and support your team and give them an environment that's going to make it difficult for the road team to succeed. Mm-hmm. Because I think what we have seen is whether it's Samford, whether it's Winthrop, whether it's any of these teams that have come through here in, over the years, the gap between like the really high-end teams like Arkansas and the gap between some of these mid-major teams, it's really shrinking. And so what used to should have been a 20, 30, 40-point blowout on a Tuesday night, that's not always the case now. And you think about last night with Winthrop. How many seniors did they have on that team, fifth-year seniors?
It was eight,
a lot.
I want to say.
A lot? Yeah, so like I mean, you're talking about 22, 23, 24-year-old
experienced guys.
What's Arkansas's average age? It ain't that. And so, you know, you got to be able to make
nine
up.
Nine seniors.
You got to be able to make up that gap. Yeah, you know, I bet Winthrop's average age last night probably would be somewhere around 1.5 to 2.5 years older than Arkansas. If you just took all their roster and added it up, it was several years, or it was over a year, probably multiple years. And I don't know. I feel like, you know, if you're buying a ticket to go to the game, don't just look at the name. Hey, it's Winthrop. You're going to win this one by 19.5 because FanDuel said so. You got to go in there and you got to make sure that you do your part to help the team win that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, so I mean, yeah. Yeah.
You're speechless. I have not gone to a
sporting event as a true spectator in quite some time. I want to say when was the last time I went to a sporting event as like a fan or as just a person going to be there? I want to say it was probably a St. Louis MLS game like last summer.
This is the most least surprising thing you've ever said.
and you know what? You know, in those games, I was heckling a little bit. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Arkansas back on the floor Friday night against Jackson State. Maybe that one won't be so close when the Razorbacks play Tigers. It's
going to
be 7 o'clock on Friday over at Bud Walton Arena. Anthony, appreciate you being here. When we come back, David Eckert from the Austin American Statesman will join us to talk about the Longhorns. First, another word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. 2:30 Saturday, Arkansas takes on Texas down in Austin. The Longhorns ranked number 17 in the latest CFP rankings that were released last night. David Eckert covers Texas for the Austin American Statesman, and he joins us now. David, Texas coming off a 35-10 loss to Georgia last week. Seems like every time Texas and Arkansas plays, it's a tight game, maybe tighter than anybody expects. What's the feeling like there in Austin as they get ready for this game?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they're reckoning with the idea that the goal that they've been chasing all year, which is a national championship and playing in the college football playoff, might no longer be attainable. You know, and so obviously that produces emotional ramifications for a game like Saturday's, where it's like, okay, you know, you might not have anything to play for. So how do you react to that? I think being 17 in CFP maybe still kind of gives you a carrot to chase, but I'm curious to see mentally where they're at Saturday.
If they can beat A&M at the end of the year, do you think there's any chance they could slip into the playoff field as a 3-loss team?
Never say never, right? Because, you know, one of those losses is to Ohio State in a non-conference game on the road. So, you know, if the committee is going to really value strength of schedule like they say they're going to, maybe. But I think it's unlikely. I think they need a lot of help. Oklahoma's got to lose. Vanderbilt's probably got to lose. They need some considerable help. And they don't need any bid stealing nonsense from the Big 12, the ACC. You know, there's just a lot that's got to go their way for this to happen for them.
Steve Sarkisian looked like he got a little heated today on the SEC teleconference. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So he came right in. Opening statement was very clearly upset about some things that had been put out there. I'm pretty certain he was reacting to a video that Desmond Howard released that essentially speculated that he and Texas might mutually part ways at the end of the year, and he was upset and vehemently denied that and kind of went after the media for recirculating that and posting it. And there was an incident earlier this year too with the Athletic's Diana Rossini had linked him to the Tennessee Titans vacancy, and he vehemently denied that as well. So he's pretty upset with that. And I think reading between the lines, it sounded like other programs were approaching guys in his locker room and saying, "Hey, your coach might leave. Come play for us." Is what it seemed to me was happening. So I think he felt like he had to address it.
I thought it was crazy to hear earlier this year, even the insinuation, whether it was true or not, that he might be on the hot seat. I mean, this is 2 years in a row he's taken this team to the semifinals of the playoff. I mean, they're for whatever you want to say about how this season's gone for them, this could still potentially be a 9-10 win season for them, depending on how things play out. Am I wrong from looking at this from so many miles away, saying that it's crazy for people to say that he's on the hot seat?
No, you're not. I mean, it's nuts to me too. I think people who watch college football have a tendency to say, "I don't think that guy's calling plays very good right now," and use that to inform their opinion about whether or not a coach should be coaching their football team, and forget all of the rest of the program building stuff that goes into being a good college football coach. And so I think that's kind of what you were seeing, because look, his offense has not been very good, right? Like they have a quarterback who many evaluators view as like this generational talent, and they're just okay on offense. So I think people are taking that to mean this guy should not be Texas's head football coach, which I think is nonsense, because like I said, there's a bunch of other stuff that goes into being a good coach. But I don't know, it's Texas. The demands are big, and when you don't meet them, some folks are going to have some stuff to say, I guess.
We know full well what going up against Texas teams are like, with Arkansas being in the Southwest Conference previously, you know, back during the renegade days of the conference. Now that everything has opened up, I wonder what it's like being there in Texas, where, you know, SMU's like, okay, you know, we were 40 years ahead of the curve with what college football's turned into, and what's going on with Texas Tech. A&M is obviously making a big commitment, Texas too. Yeah. What's this feeling like down there, where, you know, all of this is happening, but it's all happening in different conferences?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, I think right now Texas fans are too excited still about the new shiny object that's the SEC to say, kind of look within themselves and say, hey, it would be cool if we were playing this new version of Texas Tech or SMU or whoever, or Baylor or TCU. I wonder if in 10 years, if these programs continue to invest the way that they are right now, if they might change their minds about that. That could be an interesting discussion. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think for Texas, right? Like, you know, other people are investing. Other people are paying players at a level that makes them competitors to you for the best talent in Texas and the surrounding areas. You've seen that with a top offensive lineman here in the next cycle who went to Texas Tech over Texas. I mean, guys are picking Tech over the Longhorns. So from a competitive standpoint, I think it's really interesting. How does that impact Texas's roster building? Are they going to be able to always land the kids from Texas that they want to land. I think that's going to be something to monitor for sure in the next 4 or 5 years.
There's been so much said about Arch Manning this year. I thought, based on what I had seen from him the two games prior to playing Georgia, it looked like he was starting to turn a corner. And then maybe it's the fact that they're playing a real talented defensive team from Georgia that they made him look kind of pedestrian again. What are your thoughts on the way his season is going and maybe the steps that he's taken from that slow start that he had?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, Arch was a problem. I think he's evolved into an asset at this point. I don't think there's anybody on offense who's playing better football than Arch Manning for Texas right now. In those Kentucky and Mississippi State games, really the Mississippi State game more so than the Kentucky game, and then into Vanderbilt, I mean, they finally protected him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the numbers that produced. I mean, this offensive line, like, atrocious, really, really bad for the vast majority of the season. There was a point, I think Lenoris Sellers has passed him now. There was a point where he was the most pressured quarterback in the SEC by like a lot. And I think Texas's weapons have disappointed. Texas's run game is definitely disappointed. And so they're kind of asking Arch, like, hey, what do you got, man? What can you do for us? Sometimes it's worked against Georgia. It didn't, but I thought he was okay. Like, I didn't think he was terrible in that game, but he certainly wasn't good enough to go win it by himself. But there's not a lot of quarterbacks who are going to be in that stadium against that defense.
I've got these efficiency ratings. I've got defensively Alabama, Oklahoma, and A&M only ahead of Texas this year, and a couple of them just slightly mm-hmm. ahead of the Longhorns. It seems like the defense has been really consistently solid. What do they do well?
Yeah, they get after the quarterback. I mean, their secondary has been an issue lately, but their front seven is really good. Colin Simmons started slow, but has emerged as one of the best pass rushers in America, like he was supposed to be. Anthony Hill, outstanding linebacker. I don't know if he's going to play this weekend. I suspect probably not. If you're going to make a guess right now, but. Yeah, I mean, the front seven is the strength of that defense. They have one shutdown corner in Malik Muhammad, and the rest of the secondary has kind of been shaky. But they really get after the quarterback. That's the big difference maker.
Brad Spence is there previously at Arkansas. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I mean, I suspect they'll probably do something similar this week with him to what they did against Vanderbilt, which is he was basically their quarterback spy. And they did it in a really interesting way. I mean, he wasn't at linebacker. He was often with his hand in the dirt and then just kind of dropping back to spy Diego Pavia. And that worked really well. They bottled Pavia up. They sacked him 6 times in that game. I think Spence had 1 or 2. So his numbers are not substantial, but he fills a very niche role against elusive quarterbacks, and certainly Arkansas has got one.
I know Sarkisian said something earlier this week about Arkansas just being a dangerous team. I wonder, in terms of how this game falls on the Texas schedule, where I would assume there's a lot of people looking kind of ahead to next week and A&M coming to town, and first time that that's happened in so long, and what's going on with the Aggies and their season. Is there any threat of overlooking Arkansas this week?
For sure. I mean, 100%. It's between two of the three biggest games on Texas' schedule in Georgia and Texas A&M. They've got I think, like I mentioned before, a real potential for an emotional letdown. This is a game that means everything to Arkansas, right? And I don't necessarily know that Texas shares that feeling. So, there's like a huge potential. I think this is like teach tape trap game. If you're gonna identify one.
We know how big the A&M and OU rivalries are to Texas. They've got to deal with Arkansas. They're gonna have to keep them on the schedule every year, at least for the foreseeable future. How do people down there feel about this rivalry game?
Yeah, I think kind of like what I was saying before. I think they acknowledge it as a rival, but it's tertiary. you know, I think it's viewed as something that should be on the schedule, but it's not circled in red, I don't necessarily think.
What are your thoughts on Arkansas?
I think this is a very – I think they're fun. I mean, maybe not for Arkansas fans, but they're just, like, chaotic, funny a little bit, you know? Really explosive on offense. At the same time, they make a ton of mistakes. And so their games that I've watched just tend to kind of be like ping pong a little bit. But I think this is a team that can come beat Texas if Texas doesn't show up. 100%. I mean, they've got the quarterback. They've got an offense that – like I mentioned, is explosive. I'm getting ready to sit down and write about that. And a Texas defense that's vulnerable to the big play. So certainly, I mean, Texas's roster is better, but, you know, in a game like this, you certainly, I think it'd be very silly to count Arkansas out.
Texas hasn't played a whole lot of home games against quality teams this year. The Red River game, I think, has something to do with that. And of course, they played at Ohio State to start the year. It seems like whenever they have been at home, though, the offense has been a lot better than it's been on the road. Is there something to that?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers certainly indicate that. Really, the only time they played halfway decent offense on the road was Mississippi State, and that's just – like a defense that belongs in the Conference USA. So, you know, you don't necessarily give them too much credit for that. So, I think certainly at home, I mean, Vandy, they just ripped Vandy up. They were really good as well in their non-conference games, a couple of those offensively, Sam Houston. But like you mentioned, I mean, they haven't really played a whole lot of home games against good teams. So maybe it's just that they're playing all of their road games against quality opposition and that's skewing the numbers. I'm not sure. I think A&M in the last week of the season will kind of help us decide what's going on there.
Yeah. David Eckert of the Austin American Statesman. David, we appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. And we appreciate all of you being with us today on our show. Hope to see you again tomorrow or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.